Hello and welcome KSCO 1080 AM to Better by the Minute Life with Becca. My name is Becca Dukes, and every week we are bringing empowering information through people who have experience and knowledge when it comes to life and living. And this evening is part of our series on addiction and sobriety. And I am just so honored to have with me Mia, who is coming from an angle of a family member, somebody that's been in counseling, working with a lot of different types of addictions, not just drug, but we're also looking at addiction when it comes to food. Also, and dependency. So, Mia, welcome to Better by the Minute Life with Becca. And I forgot to say, and this program is being sponsored by betterbythemintelife.com. Mia, welcome to Better by the Minute Life. How are you this evening?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks, Becca, and thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Well, Mia, you have such an amazing story that I wanted to share with people, because not only is your story coming from one as a counselor within the addiction type realm and working with people that are there, but also as a family member, and then having your own clinic and also music.
Yeah.
You have created a whole amazing music realm from this, I don't want to say a wonderful thing called addiction, but it has created something wonderful that's been a tool to help others. But first, share with us a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
And what got you into this?
So my name's Mia. I have lived in the same state for most of my life. I have a father that's Italian, a mother that's American. So I did spend some time in Italy when I was younger. And then, you know, once we moved here, I've been here ever since. And, you know, life has just an interesting way of guiding you through it without you even knowing where it's guiding you. So, it's been interesting. You know, at a young age, I always had a lot of different interests. I remember my brother at one point in my life, he was like, Mia, you know, you can do anything you want. You just can't do everything. Because I was that kind of kid that, or even teenager, that I just had my hands in a lot of different areas. And I was stretched pretty thin, but I didn't feel like I was like completing things. And is simple, you know, in our lives, there are those moments that we have that are really like transformative or just really impactful. And that was as small as of a thing as it was, it really impacted my life. And I just started feeling like, yeah, like I need to start completing things. I had a really good approach to starting a lot of things, but not as good of approach to actually completing things. And so I think that really changed that course for me. And I started feeling like, you know what, this feels really good to actually complete a project or to follow and see something through. And I feel like with my personality, I needed that. And it's changed my life because of it. And I feel like I've been able to accomplish things that had that awareness not come to life, I think I would have had a different life, you know? So I remember I was 19 years old, and there was this clinic that had opened for women suffering with eating disorders. And I just knew at that point that I had an interest in helping people. And my major was in the social sciences, social work, and psychology. And so I wanted to do something in that field because it aligned with my education. And so I remember at 19 years old, I'd never had a job like this one. And it was at this clinic for eating disorders. And I remember going in for my interview, and I was just this confident little 19-year-old. And I told them, like, I know I'm supposed to work here. So when you guys know that as well, let me know, which sounds,
wow.
Looking back, I know. I'm like, wow, I don't even know if I have that confidence now. But at the time, it was just like, I know this is where I'm supposed to work. And so I don't know. It was genuine, but they called me back and I was hired the next day. And so I worked at that clinic for about 4 years and loved it. And then during that time, I was looking at getting into the music therapy, a music therapy program. It was a music therapy major at a university here. And so to prepare for it, I got another job at a treatment facility for recovering addicts. And it was, you know, I was going from working 5 graveyards in a row to working at this other job. So I, you know, go to this one job at 5 p.m. and get off at 5 a.m. And then I was at my next job at 7 a.m. And no way could I do that now. Amazing how the body is so resilient when you're younger. And so I remember just working really hard and getting into this other population. I just developed a real love for people struggling with addiction. And I think it really hit home because I had a family member who struggled from the age of 14 with drug abuse, everything. I would just say it was abuse of any substance she could get her hands on. And so that impacted my home life tremendously. And even challenges with dating people with addictions, and it just created kind of my own addiction of codependency, which was just really damaging in my own life. You know, being young, I don't know that I necessarily had all the answers. I think at one time I thought I had all the answers, but you realize really fast that it's just not that simple. So I'm trying to think. Long story short, through a chain of events, I ended up getting a job in a jail. And it's been one of the most impactful experiences of my life. You know, I worked in a program where we helped rehabilitate people struggling with substance abuse. And through that process, I developed a lot of teaching modalities from music to different movies, poems, books, and just really grew to love and appreciate people struggling with addiction. So that's kind of like where kind of the short version, I guess, of my life and my experience with addiction. And that's kind of where that is where the music part evolved. And I don't know if you want to know more about that or if you have other questions first, but.
Yeah, I definitely want to get to the music part. And I think let's end on that because I would like to play at least one of your songs towards the end of this program. So everybody stay tuned because this music is amazing. Absolutely amazing. I have listened to it and it's like, wow. Because I've worked in the prison systems also, and I've had a family member, my son, who was and still is caught in addiction. And, you know, it is really a new kind of a love and appreciation for a lifestyle and choices and loving them where they're at. Mm-hmm. So I love the fact that you are willing to come on with me this evening and talk about your experience through treatment centers in the knowledge that you have gained there. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So what would be, as a family member now, looking back, what would be any type of recommendation that you would suggest for somebody who has a family member
that is in addiction?
I think one of the biggest challenges, and I saw this with family members, you know, with the different, even with eating disorders, it's very easy when you're on the outside looking in to think you have all the answers, right? Oh, if you just did this, and if you just did that. And I think for the addict, it's so exhausting because they are so consumed by this, this beast, you know, this internal struggle that they don't see it as simple as somebody on the outside looking in. You know, they're not looking at it as, oh yeah, you just need to do this and everything will be better. It gets to the point where they need help. They can no longer do it on their own, right? So what we think could be like a profound sentence to them, it's just not that simple. And so that's something like looking back, I think through my experiences, I do have a lot more compassion when it comes to that, that it's just not as easy as being annoyed and acting like it's just so easy and so simple. I think one of the biggest challenges for being involved or loving somebody with an addiction is not losing yourself in your own addiction. Codependency is one of the, you know, the most challenging addictions when you're dealing with that addict and non-addict in interaction or dynamic or relationship. And so codependency was one of the biggest challenges that I saw family members, you know, wanting to rescue, just believing like, oh, if they did more, if they did this, or if they gave this person this, or if they allowed this to happen, that somehow that would just fix them. And it's a really deflating moment when you realize it's just not that easy. So I think for me, having strong boundaries. Sometimes we think that love doesn't have boundaries. And so we think, oh, if I set a boundary, then I'm not loving them, or they won't, you know, then that's showing them that I don't love them. And people have struggled with that mentality of just feeling like, oh no, I need to, because this is how they're going to know I still love them. The root of all addiction, in my belief, is, I would say that answer is self-love, right? Somebody who has self-love doesn't have that desire to self-harm, right? Because they want to do what they can to protect and show their body that love. And so getting a person in active addiction through over to the other side involves that journey of finding self-love. And so as somebody that is on the outside or involved with people in addiction, you have to make sure that you don't lose your self-love along the way, because that process is a steady slope downward into you developing your own addictions, right? Whether it's addiction to frustration or to hate or to anger or to disappointment, you know, we can be consumed by emotions. Emotions in and of itself can be an addiction. And so that would be like the biggest lesson that I feel like I learned throughout this process, is just, you can love and you can also have boundaries through that process. And they're necessary for healthy interactions and a healthy relationship with anyone struggling with addiction. So.
Wow, you touched on quite a few things as I'm going through my mind and trying to figure out what would be the best way to show my son that I love him and support him without supporting the addiction.
Yeah. Like, just to add there, it's like when you take on a rescuing role, which even if your intentions are so good, like, well, my intentions are good, therefore it should come across good, right? And that's just not always the case. When you engage in those rescuing behaviors, there's an underlying message, and it's this silent message that person is not capable of doing certain things for themselves. And so we send along the way, we send these little silent messages of you're not capable. And that's why I'm here helping you. So that's where I think, you know, boundaries, setting those strong, healthy boundaries, although it may be very uncomfortable and painful for the addict, because they don't know at that point, the impact that your boundaries have on them, right? But over time they will. They learn respect when you set boundaries. They learn that they are capable, right? Because then it forces them to have to do things for themselves versus getting into that cycle of kind of the victim, or I'm not able, I'm not capable. And little by little, the boundaries that are set forces them. Now, it might not immediately force them, but if they are, I guess, at any point looking for self-growth, it's going to help them. And I think that is one of the most challenging lessons for people on the outside dealing with, you know, loved ones to do. Like, it feels like we're abandoning them, or that we don't love them, or that we're being too hard, or that we're not understanding. But in reality, it's actually showing ourselves self-love, which is an example and can be a very powerful example to them when they're ready. And I think leading by example is probably one of the most effective things that you can do when dealing with someone in active addiction. So, mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think is very important, is making sure that you are practicing self-love and having those boundaries protects yourself.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Because the addict, I'm telling you, like, as much love as we have for them and understanding and excuses that we've made, you know, for people in our lives, loved ones that are in active addiction, it's damaging to ourselves. Like, it can really make you lose your sense of self if you're not really aware of every decision that you make in their life. And in an active addiction, the addict does not, they are so self-consumed by this need to feel a certain way, they are not considering your feelings or how it's affecting you at all. Even when they say the words, you are not of concern. The addiction is so strong that it is all about them getting that next fix to make them feel a certain way. And so by you not setting boundaries, it's almost like you're giving more power to that sickness. Has nothing to do with them as a person. It has everything to do with you protecting yourself and being in the best place you can and showing up in the best way you can and in the healthiest way you can for that person. So.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because there have been many times where I have had to remind myself, this is not him. This is the drug talking.
Yeah.
This is the actions of the drug, not him, because mm-hmm. he himself, amazing, wonderful, loving, caring, do anything and everything, just a people pleaser who was always happy.
Mm-hmm.
So are you able to speak to maybe those who are not in addiction yet as parents? What would we look for?
So kind of like what we call the red flags, right?
Yes.
Red flags, there are so many of them. And parents know their kids better than anyone. And so those red flags are things that you don't want to ignore. And that's anything in changes of attitude, changes in behavior. Maybe they start sleeping in longer, they're missing school. They're not following through with certain responsibilities. Some of the changes can be subtle. Maybe they're, you know, where they were once a little bit more pleasant, happy-go-lucky, kind of like you said about your son. And then you start seeing these defiant, kind of rebellious type of remarks or attitude surface or come to light. And so sometimes I think I think it's good because we talk a lot more nowadays about those type of changes in our children. But I feel like 30 years ago, that wasn't the case. 20 years ago, 15 years ago, it just wasn't something that we talked about as much. And so as a parent, you've got to be careful because you start thinking, oh, I'm failing as a parent, or I'm falling short, or it's my fault that they're like this. And we start to engage in a lot of blame and shame and, you know, things that can be very destructive to our own peace of mind. But red flags are anything that is outside of what the norm has been for that child. And the sooner that you can address it, because with addiction, it's not like the person just goes from this happy, healthy, you know, responsible human to the next day they're using drugs. I mean, there's a lot of steps and signs that come before, and it can be in, I think one of the biggest things, that the biggest red flags, is a child's inability to cope. Because what it comes down to is our emotions drive our thoughts, right? And so if we're not working through those emotions and turning to healthy coping skills, that's the first sign that little by little, you know, it's easier to make decisions that take us down a path of destruction. So where maybe at one point they were involved in sports, or they loved going and doing things that, you know, maybe going to the gym, or maybe they enjoyed playing instruments or drawing. And when you start seeing them stop things that they really were passionate about at one time, it's another sign that something's going on emotionally and internally that needs to be addressed. So keeping that open conversation and being willing to talk about the hard things, or engaging even when that child doesn't want to, because children are still figuring out how to deal and cope with their emotions well into their 20s, you know, and some of us for the rest of our lives, especially if we've had a lot of trauma or addictions in our own past, it can be a very long process of getting back to a place of healthy coping. So
yeah, healthy coping is it's different for everybody.
Yeah. Yep. Because it's really what, you know, there are a lot of things that we can engage in to help us cope with tragedy or negative emotions or trauma in our lives. And so for one person, it may look very different than for another person.
Absolutely. Well, we are coming up on a break. So Mia, it's been great so far. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Yeah,
I love having the different insights and having that knowledge that you are bringing to the table that is just so helpful for somebody else. So we will be right back on Better by the Minute Live with Becca on KSCO 1080 AM Santa Cruz. you go to my website. I am going to have some information that might be helpful for you or somebody that you know that tells more information about some of the projects that Mia has worked on that can be helpful in, would it be coping, Mia, when it comes to your music and and the whole purpose of it?
Mm-hmm.
Because not only have you been a counselor and have worked in treatment centers and jails, and you now have your own clinic, but you are a music artist as well.
Yeah, I have a day job for sure. I think that's what every struggling musician or struggling artist says. But yeah, music has played a big part in my life, and it played a huge part in my teaching when I worked in the program that was dealing with drug addiction, even with the eating disorders. But music has a way of connecting us universally, no matter the language, no matter the barrier, no matter the challenge, addiction, music is uniting. And music can be very healing. It can elicit a lot of different types of emotions, and it can even be destructive. You know, if you're in a certain space and you engage in listening to music that feeds those negative emotions, I mean, it's powerful. We see people committing some of the most heinous crimes over an emotion. That just tells you how powerful and how if emotions can drive someone to do that, something that destructive, it can also motivate you to do something amazing in your life. And music is a powerful tool to affect those emotions. So in my teaching, we would always try to find songs that would coincide with that lesson or a concept or something that we were teaching. And there were times I just didn't feel like I could find the right song. And so just to give you a little bit of a backstory. So every month in this program that I worked in, we actually invited the inmates to write a song. And so they had to write their own lyrics and they had to sing it in front of the class, which is very, very scary and a vulnerable situation for any addict. But it was so empowering. And so every month that I would ask these inmates to, you know, I would invite them to write their songs, I took on that same challenge. And so I think it just started there. But then I realized that just through the power of music, that I started actually writing music that would coincide with the different lessons. And so that's really how it started. And my goal was to do it in a non-specific way so that it didn't matter what you were dealing with. If you were dealing with insecurities or even sadness, you could relate to the music as much as somebody dealing with a heroin addiction. And that was the biggest illustration that it just didn't matter. It just didn't matter what a person was dealing with. They could still find something in that message that could help them or that touched them, you know, no matter where they were at in life. And that's been a very fulfilling and powerful thing that I've been able to witness.
So the songs that I've heard, are they some of the songs that actually came from the challenge that you did for others that you were side by side with them and doing this? It's not just, okay, do this, and then you sit back and wait for their responses. You actually were right in there doing it as well.
Yep. Yeah. So the way that I would approach it is, you know, just to give an example, one of our lessons was called Principles of War. And it's where we would take real life principles of war and relate them to their addiction. So, you know, know your enemies. Know your allies, because in active addiction, they often get those two mixed up. They see their allies as their enemies and their enemies as their allies. So they will look at family members or law enforcement or anyone that's trying to stop them in their addiction as the enemy, when really we should be looking at them as the allies, right? So we would take those real life principles of war and present them in a way that they could relate them to their addiction. And so one of the songs is called The War. Now, the message of that whole lesson was that the war that they are fighting is really the war inside of their own head. Like the person that they are fighting is themselves. And that was, you know, that was the ultimate, like what we wanted them to take away from that lesson is here they were doing everything they can to resist and to fight and to, you know, rebel against those people who want to see them thrive in life. And even as the person on the outside, I think, how do I want to say this? So really, ultimately, the war is about the fact that people on the outside looking in, as much as we want them to change, we know that ultimately the only people who can make that decision are the people struggling with that addiction. And it's all up in here.
Right. And that brings me to, you know, the question, maybe it's just a statement, is if they're not ready, there is absolutely nothing we can do as somebody that loves them.
Yeah. With addiction, the person is addicted to emotions. And so oftentimes addicts wait. They have this idea that, well, as soon as I feel like I want to give up my addiction, it's all about, well, I'm not ready because I don't feel ready. And when they realize those emotions are so temporary and so fleeting, if they base major life decisions on an emotion, they'll never be ready. And so, yeah, that's why it ultimately comes from them. They have to be the one to decide, regardless of how they feel, regardless of what is going on in their life. Ultimately, it comes down to them making that decision.
And that's tough.
For
those on the outside.
It's so hard. It's so hard. Want so much more for them.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, as a parent, we want so much more because we know their potential.
Mm-hmm.
It's just getting them to have that self-love again and realizing that, hey, there is so much more I could be doing.
Yeah.
And I know that there are some people that are, what do you call it, when you're addicted, you're high functioning addict.
Yeah.
Where you go through life and people don't even know that you're always on a high.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until you come down and they're just like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The mood swings, the lashing out. Yeah. It's a roller coaster for, on the outside looking in.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, not having that personal experience myself with addiction, I can imagine it's probably a pretty powerful roller coaster on the inside also.
Mm-hmm. So it's why many struggle for decades with it. The emotional reinforcement that addiction has on a person, it's tough to let that go, you know, because they view, first of all, anything painful emotionally, they don't want to deal with. And so their view of that, sometimes the pain outweighs their desire. Oftentimes the pain outweighs their desire to get well. They don't want to feel the pain, and emotional pain is sometimes more painful than the physical pain for them.
And I've often wondered about that, as there was a time where I was out looking for my son on the streets, thinking, how on earth can somebody choose to live like this?
Yeah.
And they're so into the hold that the drug has on them.
Yeah.
Are they oblivious?
They're numb. I think, you know, when you numb out that emotion, the concept of time doesn't even exist. So an addict's concept of time, for us, it is a painful, it feels like a painful eternity, but for them, they're so numb that their time is not the same as ours. It's not. Years can go by and it seems like a very short amount of time, where for us, it just is heart-wrenching. And we're the ones that are living in that emotion of watching it, which is really hard, especially when you have that need to control or that codependency. It's really tough to watch. But for active addiction, it's amazing how much time goes by. And they're like, for an addict, it's like, oh my goodness, I can't believe it's been 20 years that I've been numb, right? So that's why it's critical for somebody on the outside to really develop a strong sense of self and have those boundaries and really work on self-love, because it can consume us just as much.
Yeah, I agree. And going on and living your life without being consumed by what somebody else is doing, by theirs. That's right. Well, Mia, I know that you have a few songs. It's a manifestation of what you went through. You had worked in prisons.
So we sang at a number of different facilities, and then we even did a pretty big concert for our community where we had a full orchestra that was playing our music, and we did a whole 2-hour event where we got to go through the beginning to end of that that journey. So that's been amazing.
Do you have a specific one that you would like to share with the listeners?
Yeah. Gosh, there's a couple. I mean, Dear Friend has always been one that addicts just they just can relate to. So Dear Friend is about, you know, whether you believe in Satan or the negative mind, there's a number of angles that the song was written from, but I'll take it from the perspective of Satan. Dear Friend would be like Satan writing you a letter, or your addiction writing you a letter, and describing all the destruction they were going to cause in your life. And you keep going back for more, because it's the way that it's done is the addiction or Satan is very, very crafty in hooking you, in making you believe that it is a good thing, that you'll feel joy and you'll feel happiness and your problems will go away, you know? And then when you sit and listen to what your addiction's actually saying, it's horrific, because it wants nothing more than to destroy you. But the way that your addiction's doing it is enticing. So it's like this enticing destruction, this enticing, you know, chaos. And it gets to the point where you don't realize it in time. At some point, it becomes too late. You can no longer conquer that without, it's not only our higher powers help, but you need outside help of people that, you know, can provide that support and that can provide you the tools to get out, because there comes a point where the addict can no longer do it on their own. I mean, so none of us can do it on our own outside of our higher power anyway, but I'm saying even outside of that, where they need, So that's one of my favorites. The War is another one. That's the one that I talked about earlier. It just kind of depends. Everyone has a different favorite song depending on where they're at in their recovery.
Well, how do we find your music?
So you can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Spotify. I don't think it's on Amazon. We used to have CDs, and then when everything went digital, it just wasn't something that we produced anymore. So a lot of it's just online. If you Google Project Heal, and then you Google next to it, you'd have to put like Mia or Mia Magistro, and that's Magistro. It'll bring up the different places that you can find the music.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I am going to have that information on my website, betterbytheminutelife.com, because I know listening, especially for our listeners, many of them are out driving, not at home at this time, or busy doing something. And we just have this in the background as they're going about their evening. So I want to make sure that you know, everybody that's listening, you can go to my website, betterbytheminutelife.com, and I will have information in regards to Mia and the music that she offers and has put together that is specific to addiction, coming through her experience in working with people that have been, is caught the right word? That have been caught in addiction, pulled into addiction?
Yeah, that have chosen that path, even if they don't think it's a choice, but that it is, it's that they've chosen that path, which is empowering because you can choose a different path, right? Right. So that it's empowering to throw choice in there.
Mia, it is my absolute honor to be able to share the music that you and your family have recorded. You and your have such wonderful talent, writing and music and vocals. I love how you harmonize together. It's just absolutely beautiful. And folks, if you can, stop what you're doing. Listen to the words, close your eyes and just enjoy. It's only about 5 minutes. Just enjoy and take in and think about the words that are being said. Like she said, it's not just about addiction to substances and drugs. The song has been made for nondescript when it comes to things that may be having more control over our lives than we think. Find the music on Amazon and also on Apple Music, or just go to my website, betterbytheminutelife.com. Look for On the Air, Guests, and then click on Mia. I will have direct links to both the Amazon and also the Apple Music so that you don't even have to go looking for it. BetterByTheMinuteLife.com. I know that you're absolutely going to love this. Sit back, let it speak to you, and enjoy.
To every day.
So that was Dear Friend. And folks, the music is powerful. The video is even more powerful. Make sure that you do Google and look up on YouTube Project Heal Mia.
Mm-hmm.
And you will find that video and her channel. And it's not just you. You have like a band.
Yeah, and my siblings, actually. So okay. My sister writes music, too, and my brother's a vocalist. And so they both, I have a sister that wrote some songs on there, and then we all sing on there as well.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So very creative family. I met you because of your sister, who I just absolutely love and adore.
Yeah.
And I did not know that, if that's the same sister you're referring to.
It is. It is.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, you yourself are no longer like working that day to day. You've actually Correct. Opened up your own clinic because of a health crisis that you had.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So tell us a little bit about that.
So when I was working out at the jail, it was probably in my later 20s, I just started having some health challenges, and no doctor could figure out why, but they were significant enough that I had one doctor that gave me 6 months to live, which was just really, for anyone to give anyone a death sentence and not understand or know why, it's a pretty devastating sentence. And so that really just changed the course of the life, the path that I was on. And I went from being on a number of medications that weren't helping, and I completely went alternative and, focused on cleaning my liver and cleaning my colon and my intestinal tract and changing my lifestyle. And even though at the time I was like, man, I'm not taking substances. I don't even drink soda. And here I was, my body was breaking down. It was really, really devastating to go through, you know, losing half my hair and just not being able to sleep, having panic attacks that I never dealt with before. So that journey kind of just led me on a different path. And my way to give back, because at the time I was pretty bitter, just not understanding why I was going through it and I needed to give back, to find purpose in that. And so I opened up Whole Body Cleansing, and that, you know, in the beginning, it was really just that, to help, because I knew that other people were looking for answers and I couldn't find them in the area that I was at. And so I was like, okay, well, this is, you know, I'm going to switch gears and focus here. And it's been an amazing ride and very rewarding as well. So
I definitely want to have you back sometime and we can talk about some of those alternative modalities and what you do and benefits that are not promoted by the mainstream medical industry. Yeah. I mean, that was how many years ago that you were given a death sentence?
20.
20 yeah. years ago, folks. Yeah. She was given 6 months to live. Yeah. I'm like, hey, let's figure out what she did and go that way instead of just accepting that death sentence and dying. Because yeah. if you accept a death sentence, and that's what you're expecting, that's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm excited to share more about that, Mia, on another time. But for now, thank you so very much for coming on with us through this series of addiction and sobriety and sharing your insight and your music. I just so appreciate you and projects that we're working on through alternative health. And yeah. finding a better health. So folks, you are listening to Better by the Minute Life with Becca and my special guest, Mia. Go to my website, betterbythemintelife.com. Look up On the Air and you will find my guests that I have had on the air and information about them and how you can get in contact with them. Or I'm also going to be having links to some of the things that they love and appreciate and use that have made changes in their life. Again, my name is Rebecca Dukes, and you are listening to Better by the Minute Life with Becca on KSCO 1080 AM Santa Cruz. Good night and bye for now.